Hello, friends. Today is the 27th of November, 2015. And this is a continuation of our discussion of the second part of Rays and the Initiations. It has been quite a number of months since I've been able to continue with this work. But now I would like to do that, you know, just to get a little bit of a running start. We're on program number 33. We finished program 32. They are available to you on the Makara website, makara.us. A couple of things stood out in the last paragraph, which really was some time ago. True love is rightly understood only by the mental type, who is spiritually oriented, and I assume that means, maybe something in general, but spiritually oriented means orientation towards the spiritual triad, yeah. So it's a Venusian statement. The love wisdom is coming in through Venus, and also love and mind are united in Venus. And when we talk about spirituality, it necessarily includes the factor of love. Mind alone will not do it. The hierarchy is the great cohesive factor, the law of cohesion, a second-ray systemic law related to Jupiter and, you know, in a way related to Venus. So I'm just kind of getting a running start here because it's been, for me, so many months since I have dealt with this, and it's really wonderful material. The personality is also arriving at the realization that there is, in reality, no such thing as sacrifice, or as I put it here, no such thing as real loss, that the inner vehicles are always gaining by the relinquishment of the gains of that which is prompted by lower desire. So we might fulfill our lower nature in certain respects, and Jupiter is involved in that, of course, but that takes time and attention away from the fulfillment and expansion of the higher nature, which gives us a much more encompassing relationship to life. So if we lose something on the lower level, we have to be so focused on the higher level that that apparent loss on the lower level really is not registered as loss, and we allow it to fall away. Sacrifice is usually only the thwarted desire of the lower nature, he says, willing be endured by the aspirant. But where are the aspirant's values? That is the question. But in this phase, a misinterpretation and a limitation. This is how we disciples want to view sacrifice, is not in this way. A sort of, gritting your teeth and somehow bearing the loss of all you hold dear. We have to change the orientation of what we hold dear. Sacrifice is really complete conformity to the will of God, because the spiritual will of the man and the divine will, as he recognizes it in the plan. Now that has to do with the monad, really. Spiritual will has something to do with the soul on its own plane, but even more precisely with the spiritual triad and the atmic plane. And when we begin to use the word divine, we naturally are dealing with the monad. So sacrifice is really complete conformity to the will of God, because the spiritual will of man and the divine will, let's just call it the will of the soul or the will of the triad soul and the will of the monad, becomes his own will. And he recognizes this divine will as he understands the plan working out. So there is a growing identification in purpose, a growing identification with that will, or even in a sense as that will. Therefore, self-will, desire, and those intelligent activities which are dually motivated, well, they're not motivated entirely from the highest point of view, are seen and recognized as only the lower expression of the three divine aspects, and our sense of identification is somewhere else altogether. At a higher point of tension, we exercise that focused, immovable will in identifying at a higher point in our energy system and eventually as the monad. And the effort is to express these in terms of the soul and not hitherto in terms of the dedicated and rightly oriented personality. Even if we have a dedicated and rightly oriented personality, it's still a failure in the kind of identification that is necessary to really be identified with the divine will. So, this becomes possible in its true sense only when the focus of the life is in the mental vehicle, and the head, as well as the heart, is becoming active, and I assume the heart in the head is also becoming active. The heart in the head actually is going to connect us with the monadic plane. The head center as a whole is going to connect us with the atmic plane. And the heart center, per se, between the shoulder blades, is going to connect us with the buddhic plane, connect our consciousness that is. So the heart, the head, as well as the heart are becoming active here. And I have said this is accomplished under the planets Venus and Jupiter. In this process, the stage of character building, stages of character building are seen as essential and effective and are willingly and consciously undertaken. And for how long do we have to continue to build our character? Is this something that is only found on the path of probation when you're being tested as to your fitness for the spiritual life in sight of the soul? Well, I would say it continues for a long time. You know, maybe the human character can continue to be, well, can be continued to be built until the fifth initiation. Then perhaps after that, man becomes something more than man. They are no longer men as are the masters, but having passed beyond that lesser stage, have linked themselves with the great center in the highest secret place. The Chohans, in a way, being, what can we call them, planetary lives, not just members of the kingdom of soul, kingdom of souls, are more than the human being. But the master is the, well, when you think of the fivefold image that Leonardo gave us, the star, as it were, man is a star, that is the master. Okay, but when these foundations of good character and intelligent activity are firmly established, and they must be, because so many people, they get to a certain stage in their development, and they think that character and intelligent activity may no longer really be needed because they've passed through that and they no longer need to attend to these things. And, well, if the job has been well done and they have built properly, maybe they don't need to give so much attention but to these matters. But if these foundational matters are not in place, then there will be a problem. Yes. But when these foundations of good character and intelligent activity are firmly established, something still higher and more subtle must be erected on the substructure. The substructure is composed of character and intelligent activity. So what I've said here is that the process of building the Antikoron is a subtle matter, a subtle affair, and in the lack of appreciation of its subtlety comes failure to really build. It's not just a question of going through the motions of the processes that Master DK has given us, but we have to do this with real understanding and with sensitivity to these sort of inner impressions of the vehicles involved and the realization of what it feels like for the light to ascend and touch or reveal a whole new area of potential consciousness. That is ascension from our usual ring pass knot into the much wider planetary ring pass knot of the spiritual triad. Well, anyway, I ended this. I hesitate to even look back and try to realize when it was, because, well, I don't think it was a year ago, but it could have been quite a long time. But anyway, I've been working on a book called Seeds of the Infinite, you know, and when will that be ready? I'm not sure. But in working on that, I have somewhat neglected continuing with this book, but I received the prompting that really I better continue and work on Seeds of the Infinite at the same time. Okay, so we go on here, and we're on page 468 of this great and final book by the Tibetan. Knowledge wisdom must be superseded by intuitive understanding. Of course, wisdom is a great factor, and it's even a factor involved in the monad, per se. Will, wisdom, and activity. But this reminds us of the fact that after the third degree, the knowledge petals begin to disintegrate. And the focus is on the love petals and on that synthesis petal, which is the second one. Whoop, where am I here? Okay, it's skipping over when I want to find that little image. Well, in any case, we have to learn that the buddhi, the straight knowledge, the immediate grasp of all relations focused on the before, the after, and that which is occurring in the now, and their interrelationship factually apprehended and not just theoretically apprehended. This is the goal by which we supersede mere knowledge and enter into the transcendental mind. So, this is in reality inclusive participation in the creative activity of divinity, and I think, you know, what he's saying here is that within the spiritual triad, the creativity of God on the cosmic physical plane, let's just say the creativity of God as the planetary logos occurs within the spiritual triad. Of course, it also occurs on planes higher than that, but minimally, it appears that the spiritual triad is necessary because the dense, only one aspect of the triad is in the dense physical body of the solar logos, and that is the abstract mind, and that's the very highest part of the mental plane, and all the rest are within the cosmic ethers. And we know that what has to manifest on the planet in a physical form will first be prepared in the ethers, and that the real creativity is occurring there and is followed by a kind of precipitation which reflects those inner arrangements. So knowledge wisdom must be superseded by intuitive understanding. That's a particularly Buddhic word, if I can say. Understanding is a particularly Buddhic word. It relates to Pisces, to stand under, you might say, to grasp what is underlying any particular manifestation, to always see behind and within, with spiritual discernment, but something even higher than that, because you're participating in that which is occurring behind the scenes. It's not just objective reflection of what it is, it's actually entering into that which underlies the phenomenon or the person that you wish to understand. So intuitive understanding, this is in reality inclusive, another Buddhic word, participation in the creative activity of divinity. We know how much appears on the physical plane due to what's happening on the fourth ether. That is the place where the archetype of what will appear is organized, and the next step is precipitation. And this is occurring, the Buddhic plane is, in a cosmic sense, that fourth ether, the last step of organization before precipitation. Inclusive participation in the creative activity of divinity, and divinity in this case is the planetary logos. We as monads, though, are part of that planetary logos. We are in those higher centers where the planetary logos is functioning on the monadic plane, the second plane. So the kind of creative activity that we're talking about is occurring here in this realm of the triad, and you see that everything here is on the cosmic ethers except for the very lowest aspect of the triad, which is kind of a point of transition leading to precipitation of that which has been organized within the cosmic ethers. Okay, where are we here? Right. So the divine idea, and anything on the cosmic ethers becomes an idea, begins on the Buddhic plane. The divine idea must become the possible ideal, something to be striven for. And this ideal, which is accessed via aspiration, we can say, accessed via the aspiration of the astral body, to which the mental body contributes, must become unfolded and manifested in substance on the physical plane. Creation is always beginning from above. It's not a question of seeing something in front of you and just throwing them together in some kind of new combination, which is not a reflection of an intended combination, and that intended combination being on a subtler plane than the one in which physical manipulation occurs. So if we just throw things together, they look like they're thrown together and they don't have any deeper meaning. But when we attune, as let's say the fourth ray type in the future must, attune to the inner design, the urge to the creative life, as it's called, then we will be able to organize the outer substance as a reflection of that inner creative life. That is what we want to accomplish. Okay. The creative thread, now somewhat ready, must be brought into conscious functioning activity, and that's in line with the divine plan and with the archetypal arrangements which that divine plan is intended to reflect in time and space. Purpose is a very interesting thing. It's a wholeness. And the beginning and the end are one. It's like a standing wave. It's a complete design which must be fulfilled and which exists throughout the creative process. But then the plan takes into consideration time and space and that aspect of the purpose which should be unfolded at a particular time in space. So the plan is time sensitive. And purpose has to do with the final realization, the final design, the grand design, however much time and by whatever paths it is pursued. So the plan is subject to time and space, and the purpose is not. It persists, in a sense, above time and space. And on the monadic plane. This is where purpose persists, and the plan, reflecting how the purpose is to unfold in time and space, begins to precipitate out on the atmic level. All right, let's see. So the creative thread, there's the threefold antikarana. We are told there is the life thread, the sutratma, the consciousness thread relating to the second aspect, and the creative thread relating to the third aspect. And it through the creative thread, that which is found in time and space is manipulated to approximate that which is above, outside of time and space as we usually consider them. The five lower planes are Brahmic in nature, and they pertain to Saturn. The next plane pertains to Neptune, that's the monadic plane. Neptune from one perspective, and the next plane, the divine plane, where the ultimate archetypes for the cosmic physical plane are found, that is ruled by Uranus. I mean, there are several rulers of these cosmic subplanes, these cosmic etheric subplanes, but the three synthesizing planets, in a sense, Uranus, Neptune, and Saturn, rule here. What the Tibetan seems to be telling us is that we must interpret the various forces and tendencies of the lower three vehicles in terms of higher counterparts. Perhaps we will be, in a sense, interpreting the products of the lower mind, the tendencies of the lower mind in terms of the Atma, the tendencies of the desire body in terms of the Buddhi, and the tendencies of the etheric physical body in terms of the abstract mind. That's one way of interpreting. It's kind of a correspondential way. There's also a reflective way in which Atma and the etheric physical plane are related, Buddhi and, of course, the desire plane, and then the higher mind and the lower mind. That is a reflective way of looking at the relationship between the lower vehicles and their tendencies and the higher prototypes. Okay, so desire, love must be interpreted in terms of divine attraction involving the right use or misuse of energies and forces. You know, to what are we attracted? And does it serve the plan and purpose? This process puts the disciple in touch with divinity as a progressively revealed whole. And I must say, and I want to comment on the idea that plane number six, counting from above, is related to the monadic plane, which is plane number six, counting from below. These are both the monadic plane and the desire plane, or emotional plane, are both sixes, and they are both twos from a certain perspective. So we're being put in touch with divinity, and through the desire, love, energy, and divinity is the monadic level, where the revealed whole, the macrocosm, can be sensed as well as it can be sensed in through any of our normal vehicles. That doesn't mean we have the entire grasp of the macrocosm. You know, there are many, many stages on Jacob's ladder, and we have to continue to ascend. The planetary logos is certainly going to have a much greater grasp of the revealed whole, and the solar logos still greater, and on. But in terms of what we can do as a human being, the revealed whole comes through to us most powerfully from the monadic perspective. The part, through the magnetic development of its own nature, comes in touch gradually with all that is. And of course, maybe the word gradually should be emphasized there. You know, how big is our ring pass knot of consciousness? Well, it's ever increasing, but we do arrive at the hint that the macrocosmic whole is all there is, as it is stated in rule number 5 of the 14 advanced rules and rays and the initiations. So the part, that's what we are this tiny emanative extension of the One. It's one way of looking at it. The part, through the magnetic development of its own nature, you know, relating to more and more magnetically and cohesively, comes into touch gradually with all that is. Now, all that is, I suppose we're talking about all the different forms on the planet, in the system, and beyond, when we talk about that which is, we're talking about pure being. And when being descends to manifest, all that is, all the great variety that comes to be, emerges from pure being. The disciple becomes aware of this sum total in increasingly vivid expansions of consciousness. The macrocosmic whole is all there is. This is a kind of a, we might say, a Jupiterian movement in consciousness, ever more embracing rings past not begin to dawn upon us, and we leave the darkened room in which, in the old commentary, the disciple is often found sitting or standing, the darkened room of curtailed, limited consciousness. The disciple becomes aware of this sum total in increasingly vivid expansions of consciousness, leading to initiation, realization, and identification. Well, initiation, true initiation, begins at the third degree. Realization is a is an atmic factor, the fifth or the third sub-level of the atmic plane, and identification truly is a monadic factor. So one can see these things progressing. If we go to this chart that Keith Bailey put together as kind of a... There it is. Initiation will begin for us here within the chamber of the causal body, and we'll take the first three initiations there, even the fourth in a sense, though it frees a man from this causal body. Then we will move on to realization. Of course, there are many other steps here before we can get to realization. The intuition has to be stimulated and so forth. But realization occurs on the third or fifth level of the atmic plane. And then, in terms of what identification is, it is really a monadic factor, though I suspect it is reflected in part on the buddhic plane, which in a way correlates with the monadic plane, and it is perhaps felt in the soul and even to an extent on the higher levels of the astral plane, all as dim reflections of what identification really is, because it is monadic. But at least we can begin, let's just say, after the second initiation, to begin working towards identification. Somewhere DK told us that after the second degree, the factor of identification becomes important in the consciousness of the disciple. Okay, so desire and love, not interpreted in the normal way as many normal personality-oriented people interpret it, but in terms of divine attraction, the attraction of any part to the greater wholeness, and the realization that all the many factors which we observe actually do come together, belong together, form a great unity. So, we want not to misuse energies and forces, and misuse means using them out of alignment with the plan and the purpose that are to manifest. The consciousness thread, all of this is work upon the Antikarana, and that's what we've been discussing in these recent programs. The consciousness thread, in cooperation with the creative thread and the life thread, the Sutratma, awakens to a fully aware process of participation in the divine creative plan. Well, you know, there's only so much of the plan that we recognize or understand, but as the Antikarana work continues, that awareness becomes more and more full, and we realize that we are participating in a great creative process which is impulsed by the planetary logos, and in a certain sense, that which we become ourselves an aspect of the plan. When we function in relation to the expression of our higher nature, the plan is, in a sense, manifesting. What we do is the manifestation of the plan. So we awaken to a fully aware process of participation in the divine creative plan, and more that is necessary so that what we do is not astray of what must be done. A plan which is motivated by love and intelligently carried forward. You know, motivated by the bringing together of all the parts into a reflection of the archetypal whole. That is how we can consider love to a degree. It is that kind of movement towards the arrangement of factors which exists in the world of being. So there's beauty, there's pure reason. Things are not just pulled together any old way, thrown together as it were, but they are all brought into their proper place, and in reflection of the archetypes created by the mind of God and found in some sense on the monadic plane, on the logoic plane, and really when we're talking about the great creative beings, these archetypes are found on higher cosmic planes, obviously, but we have at least a reflection of them on the monadic and logoic plane. So there is the will to remain in participation and as an aspect of the divine creative plan, and we're motivated by this desire to see everything unified in the way that it really is on the higher planes, and we use our intelligent, manipulative, adaptive quality to create those arrangements below which are reflective of the great archetypal arrangements above. Now, the next thing here, I want to say, let's see, save. If you don't save, a recent copy will be temporarily available. Okay, I'm going to save. Whoop. Okay, before I was kind of misled by the technicalities there. Direction will. Okay. Which are words describing the orientation produced by the understanding of the two processes of knowledge wisdom. It's interesting, the Buddha is sometimes called the Lord of Mind Wisdom, that is, Mercury is mind wisdom, and Venus is love wisdom. But anyway, this is knowledge wisdom, so it's an orientation. Direction will is an orientation of facing in a certain direction in space. Okay, words describing the orientation produced by the understanding of the two processes of knowledge, wisdom, and desire, love. Now, obviously, when you look at these terms, we understand that wisdom is a higher term than knowledge and grows out of knowledge, and love grows out of desire. So direction will must produce the final orientation of the personality and the soul, fused and blended and at one. We then have the soul-infused personality towards the freedom of the spiritual triad. You know, and in order to enter the spiritual triad, we must have a soul-infused personality. It seems to be saying that, and the spiritual triad is free of the constraints of the causal body. We may think that entry into the causal body is a great achievement, and for us, indeed, it would be to be able to maintain constant causal consciousness, constant awareness of our gifts and how to share them. But there's something beyond that. The spiritual triad is a planetary non-location, you might say. It's generally true. It reveals that which is free from localized form and true all over the planet and really true beyond the planet as well. And then the monad gives us identification as the type of being which is found everywhere. So it's desire will that produces the final orientation. The two other orientations are there as well, knowledge, wisdom, and desire, love. So let's just say final orientation, and we will say this orientation was preceded by knowledge, wisdom, and desire, love. The final orientation of the personality and the soul, I really have to emphasize that, because we don't want to be just one or the other. We want to have fused these two and be able to function in a wise and loving way within the realm of personality form. So, final orientation of the personality and the soul, fused and blended and at one, and towards the freedom of the spiritual triad. And let's just say, this soul infusion occurs at the third degree, but not completely. In a way, infusion has been going on as long as there has been the initiatory process. And we would say that we are 75% soul infused by the time we reach the third initiation, but the greatest soul infusion is occurring just before the fourth degree, and that complete soul infusion allows for the destruction of the causal body, because everything that can be contained within the personality from the higher realms is now contained. As for what the personality will be when it's a Maya Varupa, that's another matter, and of course it can contain more and have still more full development of the various chakras, which do still remain even in the Maya Virupa, because after all they are simply, you know, expressions of higher energies. So there's no reason, because just because one doesn't have a body born in the usual way, why these higher energies should not continue to express. Anyway, the whole idea of freedom of the spiritual triad is involved, and the synthesizing planets are certainly involved here, but not only them, but Saturn and Jupiter and Vulcan as well. So let's see, freedom of the triad. Then, the conscious attempt to use these three energies eventuates in creating the antikarana upon the mental plane. So let us, and that's the first part of the antikarana too, isn't it? You know, because the antikarana does continue into the buddhic and atmic and finally monadic realms, but the first part crosses this gap in consciousness between the higher triad and the lower projecting triad. So, and it's got to be, you know, let's just say the antikarana, okay, if I can get that right, antikarana is built consciously, let me get that correct, and what he's saying here, using knowledge, wisdom, desire, love, and that's the second stage of imagination, I suppose, and then direction, will, and that's the stage of projection. Okay, you will note that at this early stage of the process, I'm emphasizing the words orientation. In a way, it means to face the east or to face the sun. And the attempt, because the antikarana is not built overnight, and we have to go through many attempts before the, royal road, in a sense. It's not the only royal road. The Shushumna is a royal road, but until this road to greater achievement is at last built. They simply indicate the final control of substance by the initiate, and here we're looking at substance as a higher form of matter energy, and the way that this kind of control can bring us into worlds of higher vibratory power and greater consciousness, greater consciousness. Okay, now let's see if I can, I'll do this. One of the indications that a man is no longer upon the probationary path is his emerging from the realm of aspiration and devotion into the realm, into the world of focused will. Of course, Master Moria continues to tell us to strive fierily, so I begin to think that striving per se is not something we need to drop, but focused will accompanied by striving is a still more powerful combination. So one of the indications that a man is no longer on the probationary path is his emerging from the realm of aspiration, where he's reaching towards but does not have that satisfaction of having achieved aspiration and devotion, into the world of focused will. Of course, these terms, aspiration and devotion, do have their higher counterparts. Another indication is that he begins to interpret life in terms of energies and forces and not in terms of quality and desire. So he stands back and he can identify what is happening within his own vehicles and in others, and he can identify the energies and forces and give them their secret names, so to speak, as it says in one of the Ray 5 stanzas. And this marks a definite step forward. He's not just all involved in what appeals to him in terms of its quality and where his desires seem to take him. He's able to stand back and to assess and to interpret life in terms of flowing energies and forces. And this is, yes, an achievement. It represents a kind of a disidentification on the way to a greater identification. There is too little use of the spiritual will as the result of right orientation in the lives of disciples today. And this is one of those admonitions that Master DK gives us every once in a while. The spiritual will is more needed. It is an atmic factor. It operates also in the sacrifice petals of the egoic lotus. I suppose it also operates in the synthesis petal of the egoic lotus, and it operates in the personality as the will, which involves the head center for sure, and the base of the spine as well. In a way, the base of the spine is the center that controls will, interestingly enough, and synthesis is found at the head center. Well, we're making great progress here. Maybe we've done one whole page or almost that. In the future, I guess, you know, this material was written in the 1940s, okay? In the future, this science of the Antikarana and its lower correspondence, the science of social evolution, how to bring human beings together in a productive and harmonious and creative way, reflecting how to bring the various factors of the inner human being together in a way which serves the plan. So the science of the Antikarana and its lower correspondence, the science of social evolution, meaning that the person really who has built the Antikarana will be on a harmonious terms with the human race, which is the joint or united Antikarana of humanity as a whole, will be known as the science of invocation or evocation. Just think of what it will be like. You know, one day there will be an Antikarana arising from the human race as a whole. I don't know whether we'll have to wait until the judgment day. At the judgment day, which is millions of years ahead, only those will remain on earth who are really on the path, and others will be redirected elsewhere for further education. But it will be interesting to see what humanity as a whole can begin to respond to. Now, humanity is not really yet building the Antikarana as disciples are learning to build it, because humanity is not yet really meditating. You know, they are thinking, they are praying, even worshiping together, but the real building of the Antikarana is a scientific process which is not yet undertaken until human beings are on the path, and not just on the early stages of the path either. But it will come about, and maybe, you know, as I think about it, when we're in the age of Aquarius, another 700-800 years from now, in the middle decanate, which is ruled by Mercury, this science of Antikorana building will be very prominent in the field of education, I think. And we will be learning how to consciously, scientifically call for contact with and information from certain higher realms and know the methods by which the answer will come, the evocation. So, you know, he's giving us a number of different names for Antikorana building and what the Antikorana is. It is, in reality, the science of magnetic rapport. You know, unless we really have this magnetic rapport, we cannot come into a transmissible relationship with the higher worlds. So we're learning how to set up conditions below which will put us magnetically in touch with the higher worlds, which must descend to us in order to redesign the configurations in which we are habitually living so that they reflect the divine plan. It is, in reality, the science of magnetic rapport, in which right relationship is brought about by mutual invocation, producing a responsive process which is one of evocation. So when all of us human beings are rightly oriented and oriented towards the spiritual worlds, we will be each invoking either in our own way individually or later as a purposeful group, and we will summon, as it were, or produce the conditions which can be rightly answered. And then there will no longer be that split between the lower worlds in which the human being functions and the spiritual triad. You see, there is a split here. It's not really a line which is established, and we have to cross this gap in consciousness by building the bridge of light. We are weavers in the light. You know, that's a great name. One of the Arcane School degrees, a later degree, is called the Weavers in the Light, and we are weaving the lighted way into the world which is normally not accessible to us, except maybe in a sudden flash of unpredictable, unpredictable intuition, when the desire body and the Buddhic vehicle in process of formation come en rapport. So it is in reality the science of magnetic rapport. And of course music can help a great deal with this. In a way, the whole universe or creation is music, and when we can attune one lower note to a higher note, then the resonance can flow and the harmony will free up the relationship, and transmission of the higher into the lower can occur, in which right relationship is brought about by mutual invocation. And in a way, we human beings on the horizontal level who want to be in loving relationship with each other do seek to invoke mutually the soul of each other, so we can have soul relationship instead of divisive personality relationships. It is in reality the science of magnetic rapport, in which right relationship is brought about by mutual invocation, producing a responsive process which is one of evocation. We can, in a way, evoke soul response from each other. When we're talking here about the science of social evolution, we can evoke soul response from each other using love. Because love is so incredibly magnetic that you know how it is when you say something ugly or disrespectful or critical to somebody, you oftentimes evoke the same, unless the individual is highly developed and knows how to absorb the negativity you have sent forth and send forth positivity instead. But we will learn eventually how to use right speech, right thought, to evoke the best possible loving and soul response from others. It is this science which lies behind all conscious awakening of the centers and their interrelation. The centers are going to awaken due to higher flows, and we have to be in resonance with these higher energy sources for those flows to occur. So let's just say right resonance produces enlivening higher energy flows. It lies behind the rapport between man and man, group and group, and eventually between nation and nation. So on the horizontal level, we must produce this harmony. Harmony is Buddhic, and Buddhic is the fourth plane. This is the plane that we are seeking to invoke and have evocation from as our next general stage of development. We have plenty of manas as a human race. Some of us have also the abstract mind, but not so many have the buddhi, and this is what we must invoke and achieve some sort of response from that which is invoked. And this is called the evocation. So this occurs more on the horizontal level and will make for right human relationships in our worlds, reflecting the Buddhic harmony above. It is this invocation. This is the fourth phase of the sixfold Antikarana process. So we have intention, visualization, projection, and then invocation, evocation. And since it's the fourth phase, it tells us something about the Buddhic involvement in this particular stage. You know, the old question, ask and it shall be revealed, knock and it shall be opened unto you, seek and you shall find. ASK, I got them out of order, but ask and it shall be given you, seek and you shall find, knock and it shall be opened to you. Alice Bailey tells us that that is found on the portal of initiation, and as we are addressing the higher worlds, we have to learn how to ask, how to invoke in the proper way so that there will be that evocation, that which gives something to you, that which makes it possible for you to find, and that which opens the door for you. So it is this invocation and consequent following evocation which eventually relate soul and personality and soul and monad. So we're always going to reach, resonantly and harmoniously reach, and harmoniously reach towards that which is above and from which we hope for an evocation. But of course we have to ask in the right way, don't we? If we are selfish and self-concerned and self-preoccupied in the lower sense of the term, not the greater self but our lesser self, then we will not get the kind of evocation which as disciples we are really seeking. Although it is said, you know, God will answer prayers, and I suppose to a certain extent even the selfish prayers will be answered, but it's not the type of evocation that the disciple hopes for. So it is in this invocation and consequent evocation which eventually relates soul and personality and soul and monad. So we as the soul-infused personality one day have to learn how to invoke pure being and of the monad and receive that type of response which reveals more and more of pure being. It is the outstanding objective of humanity's appeal to God, to the hierarchy, and to the spiritual powers of the cosmos, no matter by what name you may be calling them. So we are reaching for the promised cohesion which reflects the original cohesion. But we have to ask in a way. You see, who is doing the asking? It's already something that has more of the realization of unity in it than just the selfish personality. The selfish personality is not really going to invoke the monad. If it does, and if it succeeds, as in the Second World War, a group of evil men succeeded, then love will be bypassed entirely, and the prostitution of the will energy will be achieved, and the personality will use it for its own ends, and we will have a great inversion and some kind of resultant disaster. The appeal goes forth. The invocation of humanity can and will and must evoke response from the spiritual hierarchy, even though it is a, let's just call it an inchoate invocation, and I'm going to just put that down, even though we have an inchoate invocation, and give the first demonstration on a large scale of this new esoteric science. You know, we are reaching for something that we do not yet have, apparently, and we have to learn together how to do that, and to see actually that our salvation, that which we really desire, is coming from above and from within. So it will give a first demonstration upon a large scale of this new esoteric science, the science of invocation and evocation. Esoteric because it is based on sound. And that's quite a hint right there, that the whole formulation of the world as we know it has been the result of the divine word, and in general, the use of sound. The A, the AU, the AUM, and then four other complexifications and adaptations of those simple sounds. All of that is the creative process. And as we begin to learn to use sound in a more precise way rather than this careless random way, the type of world which we succeed in evoking, the descent of the higher patterns, will be much different from that which is produced by the chaos of sound in which we presently engaged. So hence the use of the Om. It must be a great invocative word leading to the kind of evocation of the true pattern or purpose as it reflects in plan. So hence the use of the Om. Into this science I cannot here go. We must confine our attention to our theme, which is the science of the Antikarana. This is a very deep theme. Some people consider it to be among the deepest work which Master D.K. presented. It will be the common educational approach of the new and better schools of the future, and even those schools which are not particularly esoteric schools will be talking in terms, Mercurian terms, of what can be invoked first from the rain cloud of knowable things, and then the evocation, that which is desired, will follow. So education will turn within for the sources of that which is needed by the inquiring human being. Well, friends, we look like we're about ready to start a new section here on the bridge as the agent of alignment. This all runs deep, and we have to have a long and ongoing familiarity with it. You know, I've taught this section of rays and initiations on a few occasions, and I always find there is more to be found, and that my first reading was superficial, and that there is more to fathom. And even in what I'm trying to convey now, there will always be more to fathom as we accustom ourselves to what Master DK is trying to convey. Now, you know, somehow it's been months since I've done this, and I've forgotten how to keep time. I hope this is at least an hour long program, but maybe it will be a little bit less, but I feel it is important to stop here and then start again with this new section. I don't want to carry over, and then maybe I'll be able to figure out how to use a couple of computers here to excuse me pardon me to time out exactly what I'm doing, because I pause along the way here and there, you know, and then one loses exactly how much time there is. Anyway, our next program of this nature will begin here with the bridge as the agent of alignment, page 470, Rays and the Initiation, program number 34. So I hope that there's enough of a segue between what I did a long time ago and this, and that it all begins to come together and make sense. And we'll talk to you a little later when I get going on the other part. See you now, and bye-bye.